can't make it for this morning, and they will be joining us next week. Social development as we receive the notice, thought that they will be starting a bit later. So Mrs. Mumala, who are we waiting on?
Waiting for Lana and Ms. Lerka. They will be dealing specifically with the issue of Okutwal. But I will be doing the broader VP if I can start.
But I think
we
also play the DVD
song.
Are we
going to
play the DVD or later?
No. You can play it on your own leisure time.
Is it long?
No, it's not long. It's quite interesting. Maybe after the presentation, then it speaks to, it summarizes what I'm going to talk about.
I
was
actually going to
Honorable members, can I just get your attention? We have a DVD, VEPD DVD that basically gives you a picture of VEP. Now we got a copy and we're going to make copies of it. There's no formal copy yet, so you'll have to be with an off the record copy. Would you like to watch it first, or you want to watch it first quickly? Yeah, and then I think we go into the program. Connie, can we do that?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
you, Honorable Chair. This DVD dates back to 10 years. We're doing the 10th anniversary last year, so you'll see some of the programs are rather old, but we're trying to capture the 10 year of VP. Last year we had a conference, so we thought it's important that the English can save the day since we're going to present today. Maybe I should start by introducing my team. I'm Connie Mumalo, Chief Director for Families and Social Crime Prevention, of which VP is a component within my Chief Directorate. I'm with Musa Ngobo, who is the Director for Child Protection within the department, because we are going to have two presentations. The one will specifically focus on the issue of ukuthwala as per request. I will be doing the broad overview, so she will be dealing with that presentation. Then we also have Lana, I think Lana is well known, and then also Nomgobo from Eastern Cape. She's the director there, of which she's going to assist us in terms of clarifying certain issues related to the topic that we're going to discuss also today. Next to her is Tulufelo Moloi. She's the director for VP within the department. I think the DVD has taken much of my presentation. I will try to jump where I think it was captured properly. The outline is long, but I think I'll try to shorten the presentation, but not compromising the quality thereof. This is the outline. I'll deal with the vision and the purpose of the VPS broadly, the priority target groups that we deal with, the institutional mechanism that we've got, the stakeholders and their roles. What we have achieved, it dates back to the 10 years, but I'll try to indicate the most recent achievements. The issue of shelters and one-stop centers, because from that DVD you will see there are more than what the DVD is referring to. Then what is it that is exactly happening in provinces in terms broadly, in terms of services, challenges and conclusions. In terms of introduction, this program is under the Pillar 1 of the National Crime Prevention Strategy of 1996. The NCPS itself, it advocates for a victim-centered and restorative justice approach to crime prevention. This program was launched in August 1998. That is why last year it was celebrating its 10th anniversary. I think we all agree that the program is based on strong partnerships with all government departments. There's no way social development alone can provide services to a victim and then they are, you know, holistic. We need other departments and we need our civil society organizations. We need our volunteers. We need business. We need academics and institutions because they provide us with research. This program also, as I've indicated, focuses on victim-centered approach to crime and strives towards developing knowledge and victim issues, strengthening resources, addressing needs of the victims, and stimulating volunteer participation, and preventing secondary victimization. This program is an intersectoral one, as I indicated, and also an interdepartmental program. As a social development, we are the lead department, and we also host the secretariat for the VP management team, which comprises of various government departments. We are responsible for coordination, managing, and facilitating development and implementation of victim empowerment policies, services, and programs. This management team is responsible for providing strategic direction to the program and coordination of services. Provinces also have provincial VP forums that facilitate interaction of all relevant stakeholders in each province. The vision of the program is that we want to have a society in which crime prevention is prioritized and the rights and needs of victims of crime and violence are acknowledged and effectively addressed within a restorative justice framework. And the mission is to develop, strengthen, and monitor the integrated victim empowerment policies, programs, and services at all levels through strategic partnerships within and between government and civil society organizations. We do have five key objectives within this program, and we also have a policy guideline. I think we have distributed some copies. These objectives are from that policy. which is an integrated policy guideline. The first objective really deals with the issues of policy and legislation. The second one on management, because we find that management is key when we want this program to succeed. The issue of service delivery, training and capacity building, research, monitoring, and evaluation. The priority target groups that we are focusing on, but we are not saying we're ignoring the others, but we are saying all government departments, as they do their planning, these are the priority target groups that they should focus on: women and children, people with disabilities and older persons, youth, teenage girls and boys, men and boys, because we believe that if you don't have perpetrator programs, you will never succeed. We need to really educate and take along men also in this area. Victims of human trafficking, victims of sexual assault and rape, and victims of domestic violence. The institutional mechanisms that are in place, as I've indicated, is that structure. It is an intersectoral structure, the VP management team at national level. We also have provincial forums, also chaired by DSD in the provinces. These forums, they report to the IJS Development Committee, which is within the JCPS cluster, be it at provincial and at national level, then ultimately the DG cluster and cabinet. The stakeholders that are involved in these forums, the Department of Social Development is the lead chair and providing the secretariat, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the NPA, Department of Health, Correctional Services, Education, SAP, and civil society organizations are represented in. And in that category, we also include universities and research institutions. The roles of stakeholders, briefly with DSD, we, as I indicated, we do facilitation and coordination of the sector. We provide trauma counseling and debriefing. We establish shelters and one-stop centers. We provide training to our service providers within the sector. We conduct campaigns and create awareness on victimization. We also strengthen and support civil society organizations technically and financially. Most of the organizations in this sector are funded by social development. Department of Justice, they are supposed to also coordinate the development, implementation, monitoring, and evaluation of the victim's charter, court preparation of evidence in private, providing support to victims in court, also providing separate waiting facilities for victims and perpetrators in court, establishment of specialized family court. NPA, they are supposed to establish specialized sexual offenses court, coordinate the establishment of Tutuzela care centers for victims of rape. Members might ask, what is the difference between Tutuzela care center and one-stop center? The simple differentiation is that Tutuzela only deals with sexual offenses related matters. The one-stop centers are broader than that. NPA also, they do partner with NGOs to provide court support and court preparation services for sexual offenses related offenses. Department of Health, they develop the patient's rights charter in alignment with the implementation plan of the charter. They also develop sexual assault policy guidelines for medical personnel. They also develop, they are expected to develop post-exposure prophylaxis guidelines, emergency and ongoing medical and medico-legal services, antiretroviral drugs and contraceptives. DCS, ensuring victims' participation in the parole board hearings, notify victims about the release of offenders, effective rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders into society. They also provide victim-offender mediation programs, and also they strive towards the reduction of victimization of inmates in the correctional facilities. Education, prevention of victimization of learners in schools. They need to develop school safety policies related to sexual harassment, substance abuse, and management of sexual abuse by educators and learners in schools. Training of educators and SGBs on gender-based violence in schools. They are also expected to develop a framework on health and wellness in education. SAP, they need to inform victims of their rights, taking statements in private and referral to the victim support center. Also, they need to provide professional and sensitive treatment of victims and witnesses during statement-taking and investigation of crime, establishment of victim support rooms in the police station,
They also need to provide constant feedback regarding the status of the case. Civil society organizations have stressed the importance of this partnership. They are a very strong component of VEP. Most of the services are provided by them. Their major role also is advocacy for vulnerable groups and partners with government in providing such services. They also provide professional and scientific program support by academic and research institutions that indicated that they help us with development within the sector in terms of research. What we have achieved, I must also indicate that these roles are captured in the policy guideline, and this policy guideline was approved last year by both SLASA, Social SLASA and JCPS SLASA. So departments are now coming up with plan of action. Some of the departments, some of the expectations that they have met, and some they are still very firm. And currently there are, I can safely say, only two departments that are not really active. It's your education that is not really active, and it's a key department. In terms of what we have achieved, we do have policy and legislative framework within the sector. We cannot claim that we don't have enough. The only thing is to make sure that we strengthen implementation. We also have the victims charter. And by the way, I need to announce that this week is a victims' rights week, starting from the 14th to the 18th. We brought also posters there so that it can be displayed in this house as we present. And also, we have started implementing the Domestic Violence Act, and I think it helps us because already we are identifying gaps in terms of the Domestic Violence Act and the weaknesses that we need to improve moving forward. We also have a law, the Sexual Offences Act. We also have a strategy for shelters for victims of domestic violence in South Africa. What we have also done, we have developed minimum standards for service delivery broadly in the sector. We also came up with a strategy for the engagement of men and boys in prevention of gender-based violence, and this strategy was piloted in Northwest last year, and we have done an evaluation. Now we are going through the rollout process. We also have five one-stop centers. I know the video said seven. There are others that are run by health we didn't include. In Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, Northwest, Western Cape, and Northern Cape. We also have funded 19 civil society organizations with funding from the Criminal Assets Recovery Fund. We must indicate that the NPA, through the CARA Fund, they at least remember victims, because what they do when they distribute those funds that they take from the Assets for Future Unit, they allocate a certain amount to victims and then we distribute to organizations. We also participate in 16 days of activism on no violence against women and children campaign, also in the 365 days program of action to end gender-based violence. We also had research conducted in the previous years. The one was from policy to practice in victim empowerment in South Africa, and we also did one recently on the national survey on the domestic violence. So I think that one is most recent. We can even distribute to members so that they can read and find out what exactly is happening within the domestic violence program. And I must say this research has really helped us a lot because we have discovered that there are very significant loopholes within the Domestic Violence Act itself where people were coming out and saying it doesn't really help us so much, or these are the loopholes within the system. We also have full-time coordinators in each and every province dealing with victim empowerment. We do have more shelters of abused women. They are not enough, but I think we have moved from 39 in 2001 to 96 in 2009. Also, there are Tituzela care centers that are established by NPA. Currently, there are 17. We also have guidelines that is managed within the Child Protection Unit on the management of child abuse and neglect. We also have clinical forensic medicine policy, which was developed by the health department. Also, the SAPS has established victim support rooms in police stations. Some of these are in the resource directory that we have just distributed. It indicates to you which police stations have victim support rooms.
And also, where are the shelters? We will see in the resource directory that that will just distribute it also. DSD guidelines on services to domestic violence, because we have realized that our service provider, especially in DSD, they don't know exactly what services to provide to violence, to victims of domestic violence. Then we came up with guidelines, an ABC tool, to say to them, these are type of services you can provide. Also for serious and violent crimes, for victims of sexual offenses, linking with the Sexual Offenses Act, and also human trafficking, though the bill is still going through process, approval processes, but we said we cannot wait, because what you confronted with is victims that are there. They cannot wait for legislation. So we said, what is it that we can provide so long in terms of supporting those victims? These are number of shelters, as I've indicated, that there are 96. It's a breakdown per province. You can see that in Mpumalanga in Northwest, there are only three. There's real shortage. We cannot claim that there's no domestic violence problem in those provinces. As a department, we are making efforts to continue facilitating and influencing the establishment of more shelters in provinces, especially in Limpopo, Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Free State. We also have a EU support program, which we are partnering with the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. This program started last year. We have been given 20 million euros by the EU, but this money is within the UNODC. They are our implementing partner, but as a department, we're providing leadership and other stakeholders. This project has got five key result areas. The first key result area is to ensure that they support the country, South Africa, in terms of making sure that we implement our policies that are in place, because we are one of the countries that policies are there, good ones for that matter, but I think the problem is how we put those into practice. The second key result area, they want to assist us to improve coordination between relevant government departments that are within the sector, both vertically and horizontally, and within and with our civil society organizations. The third key result area, this project really wants to assist government to capacitate our staff and implement policies and comply with minimum norms and standards in all relevant government departments, and also to strengthen capacity of national and provincial DSD, as I indicated that they are the lead. We need to be seen as providing that leadership. And you can only do so when you have the capacity in terms of personnel, in terms of knowledge, in terms of resources. So these four key results area is exactly trying to do there. The last one is also trying to improve the capacity of civil society organizations in delivering services to victims of crime. So what I will do in each one, I'll just give two issues in terms of what has been done so far, because it's still linked with the entire VEP program. That first one, as I indicated, the implementation is like making sure that we do have enough copies, we have printed enough relevant copies, we are providing awareness campaigns to our communities. So that clearly indicates the numbers in terms of what we have printed since the support has started and the launches that we have had during the year. The second one, as I've indicated, we had a major conference last year to celebrate the 10th anniversary. It was also funded through this program. And we also had a consultative summit with our civil society organizations. Though we are saying we're working with them, but there are few in the sector. There are very few civil society organizations that are really interested in working in VEP. The challenge might be because of funding or other support, but we are saying with this EU support, let's bring on board as many civil society organizations as possible. Also, this program funded our 15 days of activity campaign last year. And this program also, we celebrated an International Day Against Drug Abuse, because we think there's linkages between the substance abuse and VEP. So we are trying to say to the EU and the UNODC, you can't focus only on VEP. There are other factors that are really, because if you focus only on VEP, there will be issues that are not addressed. The third one, as I indicated, it's more of capacity now to make sure that there's capacity to really coordinate departments vertically and horizontally. We do have coordinators in the 9 provinces, specifically coordinating EU projects. Though we also have coordinators within the department. What we have done is that we want them to be appointed at the director level so that, because we have signed an agreement that we have to retain the post when the project is done by December next year. So in a way, we are saying to provinces, uplift VP to be a director if your structure at the moment doesn't allow you to do so. There are forums that are being strengthened also in provinces in terms of making sure that the services are properly coordinated. The issue of capacity, we do have capacity building program within the EU. We have done assessments through participatory workshops in government departments at national level and also with provinces just to find out what are the capacity needs so that this program can provide relevant training rather than coming up with a blanket training that is not informed by me. We also have a capacity building strategy that I've referred to. We are also saying if you want really to support DSD at national and provincial level to make sure that they provide leadership, we need to have a shadow program so that by the end of this program, we have people who are really knowledgeable and who are available to really lead in this field of VP. The capacity of CSOs, here we're talking more of the grant scheme. We also have grant scheme within the EU where we are saying let's fund our civil society organizations and make sure that they improve service delivery at a community level. What I can indicate, these are just figures because we have just completed the assessment of applications that were advertised through newspapers, but we have three tiers we're using to fund organizations. We have the first one, which is for the well-established organizations. We have the second tier, which is for the not well-established and not really new. And then we have the third tier for the really struggling community-based organizations. What we have discovered during the process is that the third tier really did not submit the application. And I think we have said to our funders that we really want to have a call for proposal for that tier, and we must start preparing them now for them to be able to put in an application. Because some of them, they have a problem in terms of completing those proposals. There was a training done, but still they didn't submit. So we're saying either it is overwhelming for them, so we need to support them to make sure that they complete the proposal. And also the method of advertisement. Some of the organizations are saying, we have to spend more to go to town and buy a newspaper to be able to see the advert with a taxi. So we couldn't do it. So because the paper itself is cheaper than the transport I use to go to town. So we said we're coming up with a strategy to say, let our officials go out there and mobilize for these organizations and prepare them before we even do the call for proposals. So these organizations will be paid for in September now. These are just a list of other programs that are happening at the provincial level. Your life skills program, your parenting program, your health, lifestyle program, skills development, income generation, psychosocial intervention, counseling, debriefing, trauma. And in some provinces, there are helplines. We don't have a national helpline within the department, but Childline, it is also serving a purpose, but for children. I think there's a gap in terms of other victims that really need a national helpline. So it's one thing that we've identified that maybe we need a national helpline for people to be able, that can use even the SMS facility and also a toll-free number. The challenges, we also lack monitoring and evaluation mechanism within this sector. As much as we said we have achieved so much, there are a lot of gaps and there are a lot of challenges within the sector. Victims are not really getting the type of services that they are deserving. So, and as long as we don't have a monitoring and evaluation mechanism, we will still have a challenge of tracking or checking whether our victims are supported adequately. We also experiencing challenges in terms of inadequacy of facilities for victims of crime and the geographic spread that we have seen in that breakdown. And we also have few civil society organizations, I think I've mentioned this one, and it's a reality, we do have high staff turnover in provinces. While you train this group of workers, the next thing they've moved to either other departments or levels upper, or they're even moving overseas, if we're talking social workers. Lack of marketing and communication strategies for the program. We are presenting here, you'll find that most of the people don't know what we are doing. I think it's because there's lack of marketing and communication strategies, and I think we've acknowledged that as a department. So we are coming up with solutions in terms of this EU, because we want to take advantage of it. We are currently being assisted by Treasury to come up with a communication strategy to make sure that this program is really assisting VEP to be well known. We also want to make sure that we have a specific budget to fund NGOs that are really within the sector. We will do that with the EU project, but this project, the short-term project, will end December next year. We need to make sure that we have a sustainability plan as a department to make sure that whatever was started by the project, VEP must never be the same again. It mustn't go back where it was before the project intervened. We are also in the process of doing a feasibility study supported by the EU project to check whether we cannot have a legislation for VEP, because we do have Domestic Violence Act, we do have Sexual Offences Act, but there are certain issues that are still not regulated within. Like also the shelters that we're talking about. They are registered for funding, but there's no legislation that registers them. If anything happens in those facilities, I don't know where we will be as a department or as a government. And we want to also accreditate services that are provided by various government departments and civil society organizations to check the type of programs and the quality that is provided to our victims. So if we don't have an accreditation system or an accreditation mechanism which is legislated, there's no way we can succeed. You cannot enforce it. Even the nonsense matters that I've referred to, it's not enforceable. It's not, we have learned from the No Fault case, it's not enforceable. It's like they can decide to follow them or not. You can punish them by not giving them funding, but they can raise funds in some way and still provide a service. So we are saying if we have a legislation that will cross-reference the nonsense standards, it will make them enforceable, so that we make sure that if you don't comply, there's no way you will be allowed to operate. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Mara. Honorable members, there you have the benefit of the DVD that in a summarized way gave you kind of a view of what is happening in practice, and then we also have the benefit of a very comprehensive presentation on victim questions. Is there any questions for clarity from members? Honourable Member Lamula, I've noted you. Honourable Member Mabakula, and also from Member Mabakula.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you to the lady for a very detailed presentation. And I jotted down quite a substantial number of questions, but as you went along, I had answers on all these questions, most of them. I was actually waiting for the challenges facing the department, but you spoke on challenges. My only question now is on achievement. Why only in 5 provinces do you have this 1-5 stop center by only 5 provinces? And then I'd like to have a copy of the guidelines on services to domestic violence. I've never seen a book, I can't remember seeing a book. Yeah. You spoke on shortages of staff, and I'd like to know what strategies you have in place to really overcome this hurdle, because it seems to me social workers is a national problem, and once it is there, one cannot really proceed in rendering the services that the communities need. Rural areas, I don't think you really came out strong on the rural areas, and I'm very worried about presentations not including rural areas, because it is in the rural areas where these domestic violence really takes place. Thank you, Trin.
We are getting you loud and clear. I've been hearing you saying that the Victim Rights Week, speaking about the Victim Rights Week, is we are in the Victim Rights Week. While we don't know anything, we don't know anything about that. And then I just want you to just brief us what is the planning and why is the Victim Rights Week now. And then you speak about something when you are speaking about your achievement that has been approved last year. And then when you are speaking about something that is approved last year, for me, I take everything that you spoke as if you were just planning around the reality that will happen as it from this year onward. So you have just to brief us which is approved last year. Another thing, I was in your offices around Mpumalanga, a few of them. Actually, it's good, the atmosphere there, but it doesn't show the department. There is no picture of the minister there. There is no anything of picture of the president, maybe picture of the provincial link person in the department. So I think it's only that few questions that I have.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mahas. Now I've noted Honourable Member Sana Malau and Honourable Member Mangane and then Honourable Member Matino.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question that I'd like to ask our department, besides now thanking them for the very informative presentation, the Youth Empowerment Center, Women's Empowerment Center, had a slight problem. For example, when the social worker found me the person in charge, they have women there, the women go through the process. But when the woman is released, she may not go back to her family, you know, the husband. And they were sitting with the problem, where you send the woman now? So what I want to ask you, because it can happen at any center, because that be sorted out with the churches, what is your relationship with our human settlement department? Because look at, they are housing. So, and you need to get them in, because it's partly a question, partly a recommendation to you. Then the other question is, you have justice in the cluster. And according to the Justice Department, the specialized sexual offences courts will be integrated into the mainstream. So how are you, as social development, still going to maintain privacy? Because when it comes to preparation of evidence in private, children and adults have that right. So how are you going to maintain the privacy around this aspect? And the reason why they said they integrate in it is because when it comes to rural areas, you know, there are no separate courts. And therefore, you know, they are going to integrate it into the mainstream that our rural areas people could be helped to. I just want to make that. Then when it comes to our social workers, What retention policy? Because I know you asked the question on Pamela, but I was worried too about, you know, people leaving the services. So the department should have a retention policy in place when it comes to our social workers. Because you do hear when you go to meetings, you know, when it comes to this, that the social workers are trained. And I even think of started as a peer group. Then they just move further. Or they leave the system. Or they go overseas. So I'd like to know that. And then just a comment. The department is telling us they have 96 centers, shelters. Lifeline indicated to us 2 weeks ago you only have 60 shelters. 96 is low. 60 is low too. And I want to make this comment to you because it is hand-sided now too. Because when we had Women's Day celebrations, everyone spoke to, you know, anything, any issues surrounding women. And that 60 shelters were brought up in the National Assembly. So it's just a comment because I'm not sure where did they get their data from. Because I see you got a breakdown there, but just to tell you, thank you.
Honourable Member of Law.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine was just to make sure whether the department have the recruitment criteria. The presenter indicated that they sent officials outside to communities since the advert is a problem to the department. Now, I just want to make sure whether we had the recruitment criteria. And then the next question is that the presentation is silent on the farming areas in terms of domestic violence. And the presentation covers the people with disability, but it was not clear whether the centers that we have in the different provinces have these special facilities for our people with disabilities. Yeah, I think that's all.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you. I also thank the department for the presentation that they have brought to us. I want to. I hear they saying more about these challenges. Now, I want to know, as we have the national department, what is their role if we don't have the monitoring mechanism? What is their strategy? Because they know that they have got challenges. What is their strategy? What is their also their communication strategy? Because they talk about it is a problem. I want to know that problem that they are saying. Is that user friendly also to the rural area? Because they mentioned the rural area. As I'm from the rural area, when they talk, I was just shocked because most of the things doesn't happen where I came from. So I was just shocked. So I want to know if you are going to improve your method of advertising, because most of the time it benefited those who are next to the city. Mm-hmm. You find out you hire somebody who's from the city. When she went to the rural, she can't work at the rural area. She just collecting a check. There is no monitoring mechanism because she always, when the bus left 4 o'clock, she's not to 3:30. So there is no impact. So I just want to know how are you going to accommodate people who are at the rural area.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Member Kupane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mekoni, according to your presentation under the achievement, you indicated that the department you have conducted the research in the VP sector for the evidence based on the monitoring and planning. Is it possible that you can have a copy of that research.
Mm.
And and secondly, you also mentioned that there are keys and stakeholders helping you, if that is different departments. And you also indicated that the Department of Education is not so involved. What are we doing as a department to get commitment from other departments? Because as you indicated, that for us to be successful, all stakeholders need to be committed and to support this program. What are we doing to measure that their commitment? That's my question. The last question, you indicated that we are having 96 shelters in South Africa. And is it possible that we can have, you also indicated according to the province, Free State is 5, this province are how many? Is it possible that we can have the names, the address, the physical addresses, where there are those shelters?
Mm-hmm.
And who is the manager in terms of the number of the beneficiaries and how much did you fund with those shelters? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Kopane. You actually have a National Directory on Services
mm-hmm.
for Victims of Violence in Crime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is actually in the system. Very with your last question.
Mm-hmm.
The last question from the chair, and that's quite a long list. Sorry. Before the chairperson, Honorable Member Masilo, and then
I'm not chairperson. I've been away for the past 3 months. That's why you forgot to acknowledge me. Thank you very much, chairperson and the presenter. Most of the questions that I've indicated have already asked. But I just want to check if the department also consider the rehab of the drug users. You know, in our country, especially the youth are using this Nyaope, especially in my constituency, Karangwa Mabupane. So do you have a plan of rehabbing them? Because you know we've got a rehab center, but those who are using drugs and alcohol. And the other point, when you were presenting about the shelters, you didn't indicate about the older person because they're also being abused by other people. And also, how many older person centers do we have since we passed the Act of Older Person? So it means they are running at a slow pace even to approve them in our constituencies. The last point, Chairperson, I think the Justice Department is a cluster in terms of the victims' empowerment and domestic violence centers. When we refer them to Justice Department for protection orders, are not either willing to assist the victims. So I request the department to have a meeting, even if us as politicians, we do have a meeting with Chief Justice in the local magistrate offices, but it's still a problem. As a result, those being victims, they are reluctant to go to Justice Department. Even at the police stations, when you send the person to go to the police station and say, go and report the case, they must give a letter to the Justice Department. The police station will say, just go there, not even telling the victim to say, okay, here's a letter from us, go to court D or go to court B. So I think communication is a problem in terms of our people on the ground and the department. So whenever maybe you meet as a cluster, you have to try to request them, the senior manager, to assist the local offices, because really, as you mentioned, that the monitoring and evaluation is a challenge. I think we have to focus on those challenges. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. My question is short. I just want to understand, because under challenges, I thought you would be having challenges with the victim. Withdraw from the cases after you have taken a lot of things, or do you have any measures in place to deal with those matters where the victim now, when the case is supposed to be in court, she
she withdraw or she ran away, how do you deal with those things? Because I think there are challenges that we are facing in our areas whereby the social worker, the Department of Justice, police will do their work, but at the end of the day, the victim withdraw from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mofolo. Just the last question from us, my side. The Department of Education, mm-hmm. in terms of them not coming into, not playing their role as a stakeholder department, is it at a national level and or is it also at a provincial level? And have the cluster that deals with this matter, have they ever discussed this matter? what impact does it have on services if this one crucial sixth department is not playing the role? Since it's a department that its core business is the education of our children.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I've got my team, they will assist us in answering some of the questions, but I will provide leadership in terms of trying to answer some. I'll start from the back. The one that the Honourable Chair has raised, I think also it was raised by other Honourable Members, the issue of education. We did bring this to the attention of the class after we had tried several times writing to education to really request them to send us a representative. I think the cluster is also taking it up. The chairperson of the cluster from Justice wrote to the DG of Health, of Education, to make them aware and indicate to them the impact of education not participating. It's not even only this forum, because we sit in the cluster and find that in other forums also they are not really participating and they are very keen. So they've written one letter. We are still waiting for the response. On the 17th, we are meeting again as a cluster. If we don't have any response, I will still raise it that we really need education to be on board. It's got serious impact because recently we have developed an integrated plan informed by the policy guideline. If you look at that plan, education is not there. So we don't know how they're going to operationalize the policy guideline. It's really giving us a problem. And there's no synergy in terms of how do we intervene in schools, what programs are there, because we need education to come on board. A lot of these things are even happening in schools. And if education doesn't come on board, then we have a crisis. But I think we have made it cluster aware. They are aware of this issue and they are taking it up. But we'll make sure that as a department, we work with the cluster to make sure that finally we get the representation from education. The issue of victims withdrawing their charges, I think this is a challenge. I didn't mention it, but this is an operational challenge because after the police have done their investigation, their work, everybody else, then in the middle of it, then the victim will say, I don't want to continue the case. And I think it also, it's a constitutional right to say, I'm withdrawing. But the police were indicating to us in justice that there's a certain stage where they cannot check. Mm-hmm. So I think somehow they also have people who advise them that at this stage you can still withdraw. But there's a stage where they told us that no, they will be charged with defeating the end of justice if they withdraw at a certain stage after resources have been put in place for investigating such a case. They look at what is it that has been involved. If they've used certain equipment that are expensive, hire them, then you cannot backtrack at that stage. So it is a problem that is being experienced. But at the end of it, the victim also has the right to say, I don't want to continue. Mm-hmm.
The courts and the prosecutor can decide to proceed without the writ, to prosecute.
Honourable Chair, it will be a problem because the evidence is from the victim. Mm-hmm. If they continue prosecuting the suspect, then what information are they going to use? Because they need this person to testify. Mm-hmm. And if you are a complainant, you have to, unless the complainant is another person. But If you are a complainant, you have to speak to the person and you can.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to understand, the victim has withdrawn at the first stage, and he went back, she went back maybe to that house again, and that person do the same thing. She went back to police station. I just want to know how every stage you are no longer taking him. Every time she go and ask for the help, when she got it, she withdraw again. Now, where is it?
Yes, I was just thinking.
I was just thinking loudly, saying maybe some of the victims, you know, because this court are just open court. I could just imagine when I speak in the full house, saying to the people how this man raped me. I think it's where we lack, because really most people didn't want to withdraw their cases. But when they think, oh, Jane will be in that court hearing what that man is saying to me, really it's a shame. Maybe we need to really, at the cluster level, looking at this thing, how can we really, because most of the people doesn't want to withdraw the cases. Really, even when you visit her, you will hear she crying and said, you know, I didn't want to withdraw, but I just think, there are kids in that court, 18 years, they will hear the men have raped me. So maybe we need to think deeper, we as this cluster, maybe to influence other cluster, in that cluster to influence others, because really it's a problem. I was just want to mention that.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the sister part of my question that was, you know, stated now. But the thing is, it's okay, we have laws in place. And once, you know, a person can be subpoenaed. So how do you get around the subpoena will be my question. Because I know that when it comes to cases, you can withdraw. But the state prosecutor can decide we're taking it further. Mm. But sometimes, because of, I won't speak about commitment, etc. now. Then they decide, now, let us just leave that case. So let's look at the subpoena. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll look at that at the last 11. But also I wanted to mention that issue, because it links to the issue of specialization also in on the issue of sexual offensive court. The Department of Justice recently, last week we had a meeting. They are re-looking at this issue of specialization. Mm-hmm. They even developed a concept paper to say, in each area, how are we going to specialize? And NPA was also there, because they were saying they are pushing for specialization infrastructure-wise and also service-related-wise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because this issue of them saying they will integrate, well, in certain courts they can integrate, but they can still have it in a special time when mm-hmm. there's no one. So those are the things that we are also re-looking with mm-hmm. justice. So that policy of them not saying no specialized courts, I think they are really looking at it, mm. realizing. So I think it will deal with some of these issues, but still the victim might decide to withdraw even if it's in a specialized court. But at least it will provide for those who are not comfortable in a, you know, in an open court. So I think it will address some of those issues.
Okay, on this issue, just a small question. Because I think the private, when it comes to being private, is very important. Because you see, when a person, even when it comes to domestic violence, you go to court as a person, and you stand in front of the magistrate with a full house in this, and you give your story. Mm-hmm. And therefore, because there is a law, the law speaks about you can give your evidence in private, whether you are adult, whether you are child. And if you go Monday morning and a Tuesday morning to the courts in Port Elizabeth, the regional court, then you stand there in front of everyone. So I think that is an issue that they will have to, social development, have to deal with. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm also thinking that maybe this committee, I don't know what influence does it have in the other Committee of Justice, and maybe also calling justice to come and present, because I might sit here and try to respond on their behalf, and I can miss some of them. Of the things and the laws that they use, I might not privy to those. So if maybe the committee needs more information, I think you can use your office to make sure that maybe justice come and present how they deal with victims in court, and then they will be able to answer some of the questions. I'm not trying to run away. I'm just
okay.
Yeah, there was also a question on the issue of recruitment and retention of social workers. I think it came out strongly in four questions. As a department, we do have a retention and recruitment strategy for social workers. And fortunately, Treasury also gave us money to recruit social workers. So we are busy training, and we are seeing that it's beginning to bear fruit in terms of, though our university can also take a certain number per year, but I think at least we have a mechanism to recruit and retain our social workers. We did try to improve their salaries around 2006, 7, and 7 and 8, and now they will be accessing OSDs. And beyond that, the retention is broader than the monetary terms. It's the issue of capacity building, it's the issue of accommodation in rural areas, it's the issue of office space, because there are a lot of things that are discouraging our social workers to stay within the profession other than money itself. So the department is also coming up with an integrated sector infrastructure plan to make sure that they've got enough offices in rural areas and also accommodation for the social workers that are going to work in rural areas. The issue of rural allowance is still under discussion. It's not yet finalized for those who will be working in the remote rural areas so that they can be retained in those areas. So there are systems in place for now in terms of recruiting those social workers. But you'll agree with me that even if you put that, you'll have still few that are moving up and down, but at least the majority now we are planning to retain. Yes, research, we will circulate the copies. I only indicated the one on domestic violence, but if this other one is also requested, we can also circulate that one to committee members. I think I've responded to the issue of education. The issue of shelters, yes, there is a list in the directory. What is missing is the amounts in terms of what are we funding each one that we can provide later in terms of the for each one. What amount are we paying? And then the shelters themselves, I must say, they are not friendly in terms of people with disabilities, but we have made the sector aware. We had a consultative meeting also with the minister and the CSO. That issue also came up. Say this facility is ready. They are not accessible. So we are saying at least in each facility, make sure that there is access in terms of people with disabilities and children with disabilities, because a mom can come with a child with a special need who needs certain facilities. But currently, I cannot confirm that there's this one that I know that is friendly. And then the issue of women being released, and we're not sure where they are going. We and our relationship with Human Settlement. We have brought in Human Settlement Department now in our VP management team, though I didn't mention them when I presented because they are not part of the, they were not part of the policy guideline, but we have since realized that they are key. So they are participating in our VP management forum precisely for that point in terms of shelters and the transitional safe houses, because we're saying if you move from a shelter, before you even go back home, you might not even want to go back home. You want to move out of the shelter and stay alone while you are busy organizing your life back. Mm. So we are advocating now for transitional houses or transitional homes for abused women. Mm. And the Victims' Rights Week, why now? It is not in the calendar of government in terms of events. This week was identified by the Department of Justice because they lead the Victims' Charter. I think we all know that the Victims' Charter was launched by the then Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development. Then they suggested that every September during this week, at least we should intensify our efforts in terms of educating communities about victims' rights. There are 7 key rights in that victim charter. So precisely it's because we wanted to intensify. It's not anywhere in the calendar. So, but I think we acknowledge that there's a gap in communication. What we are doing now with the EU fund, I think I mentioned that Treasury is assisting us. We are coming up with our communication strategy, working with our own communication unit and GCIS to make sure that we market our services so that they are well known to people, because we acknowledge that they are not well known to our communities. The issue of M&E, it was identified as a gap, but I must indicate that with this EU project, we are busy now with a generic indicator, because we need to start there before you come up with an M&E framework. We have draft generic indicators that will be finalized in October. Currently, we are moving around provinces today. I think they are in, yesterday they were in the Northwest with the last province. So we'll have a national workshop to consolidate during October so that we have a set of generic indicators that are speaking to the sector, to justice, to NPA, to all these other departments that are participating, so that they are able to report when we have an M&E framework in place. Because at the end, we want this program, this project of EU, to leave us with a system that is manual and electronic, that's both manual and electronic, so that it can be used in rural areas and also in areas where networks can be accessed. Because it's a reality that you can come up with an electronic system, but sometimes it won't work in rural areas. So we are coming up with our with an M&E framework with a set of generic indicators. The method of advertising for grants in rural areas, I think I've mentioned that we discovered that those that are in rural areas did not submit a business plan. Our strategy is that we are not going to advertise, even if we advertise, but we have already informed our provincial coordinators so that they can speak to district and branch offices to begin to assist those organizations so that they can submit for funding. It's not for appointments, it's for funding that is available within the EU. So the social workers on the ground and the community development workers will assist us to really make sure that they meet the requirements. And their requirements have been relaxed. They are not the same as the ones for the well-established. Because if we say to you, you must bring audited statements for the well-established, it won't be the same with the tier 3. But firstly, they don't have access to audit, they don't have funds to even audit. So what we said we need, a 6-month bank statement, because we assume if you are an organization, you have a bank account. So at least we are saying 6-month bank statement. We are not even saying 12 months, because we're saying if we say 12 months, the bank will charge them if they need a long paper for 12 months. So we say, so we really try to tailor make the requirements in terms of their existence. The way even the reporting we have tailor made to meet their level of functioning. I think I've spoken about the issue of no pictures. We have taken note of that. We'll inform our communication section at the National Department. They will assist us and see how they deal with it. The fact that there are no pictures in the offices where you visited, even for the provincial leadership, is not the national minister. I think we've taken note of that. The policy guidelines were approved last year, but I think I mentioned when I was presenting that most of the things started happening long ago, just that there was no policy framework in place. And this framework, I think, was developed long ago, just that it was finally approved last year. So, yes, you might be right that we are in the planning stage, but we are also implementing. We have come up with an integrated plan speaking to that guideline for all government departments. That's why I indicated that education is still missing in that integrated plan. So, but when you look at that plan, we have targets. We have set targets to say this must be achieved by this year, this must be achieved by next year. So we have targets which we can go back and check. And when departments report, I'm able also to report to cluster, because if I go to the cluster, I must report on what VEP is doing for various government departments, not only for social development. So if I have a problem with a particular department, I raise it at the cluster to say, this is the problem, and I've tried 1, 2, 3, it's not working, can you intervene? So if they can't intervene at that level, they also take it to the DG's cluster to say, we have a problem with a certain department that is not coming to party, and really we need your intervention. The 5 one-stop centers and why. I think it's more on budgetary issues, because even the ones that are there, we were assisted by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So the we are now planning additional 4. So you remind me the provinces with the EU also, just to add. I think it's KZN, it's Limpopo, Free State and Mpumalanga. We are adding 4 one-stop centers, but we are also saying to provinces, let them begin to plan within their MTF, because currently we're depending on donor funding. But what is interesting is that at least we sustain. After the donors have left, then the province will take over and run with the one-stop center. But initiating is a problem. But once it's there, the province is willing to take over staff and take over the building and provide the services. So one other thing that informs the one-stop centers is the number of statistics within the area. Because sometimes you will come up with a facility or with a program, you find that there's no need. Maybe you can combine 2 districts and have 1 so that people can access the area and the services. The guidelines on services domestic violence, yes, we can circulate them. We have those ones. And if I've left something, let my colleague have to speak to me. I can thanks, honorable member. I think I can deal with that one. Fortunately, I'm also responsible for substance abuse. What we are planning to do with the new legislation is to make sure that in each province there is at least a treatment center. Currently, we have 5 in 3 provinces, which is really not enough. Well, we do have a lot of private ones, some good, some bad. There are more than 86, but they are expensive. So we are saying what the provinces are doing, they even buy beds in those that are private because of a lack of, you know, facilities. So we are saying at least in each province there should be 1 treatment center with a bed capacity of 16, which is the minimum. Another problem that we are having in terms of drug abuse is for young people, treatment options for young people. Because even the ones that are existing, you find that it's only 3 that really are providing services for the youth. So we have been discussing with provinces to say, in areas where you don't have enough facilities or enough programs, at least work with a particular NGO and fund that NGO so that a service at least is provided. Because even if you talk building takes more than 3 years or 2 years to be in place. But what are you doing now? Make sure that you partner with a private organization which is complying, which is meeting the requirements, and make sure that your resources are provided so that people who cannot afford, they can access services also. The issue of older persons, I don't have the figures with me in terms of the number of older persons' facilities that are there, but we can have the list and be circulated to members. I agree that they are also abused. We have a unit also within the department that deals with older persons, and they are also looking at older abuse, and we're working very closely with them. So if there's a need for information on really on the issue of elder abuse, we can provide that together with the number of facilities in each area or in each province. Thank you.
But I think it's a very interesting question. Because your VEP centers are for all categories of groups, whether you're disabled, older person, and so on. Because I even see that some of the things are dealt with the debriefing of ex-combatants. I'm sure that the VEP centers is accessible to older persons that are being abused. And in terms of the marketing of the service, it's also extended to them in that regard as a
I've joined Honourable Member Milan and then Honourable Member Mikula and then Honourable Member Mikula.
I think the
I just want to make a follow-up on the non-profit organization. I'm not sure because the last time it was mentioned when they are in the application, they have to go through the national office and so they are not also taking the reading from the college. I'm not sure for now because the person will apply for the CZ and not for it. It will take a year before the NPO is approved. So that's what it says. If there are no offices in the region for different, because people are determined to discourage. After applying, you waited for 12 and 15 months without any response. And when the response comes, you say you have to miss out on this 1 to 3 going with the app. Now, from there, people became so discouraged and they did applying, especially in the region. So that's on the department to check. It was in the province of still applying through the Minister of the Student Stories.
Thank you.
I didn't get, Chairperson, I didn't get the answer about the victim last week. I was asking about that.
There was explanation given.
There was an explanation.
Yeah,
okay, well, it's fine. Last week, it was the National Drug Abuse, the International Drug Abuse Week or Day. What the department has been done on that? Because seemingly, I saw only school children around Cape Town, and then I don't know in other provinces, and then I didn't see the impact actually about that. Thank you.
Can I just remind members that if members want the committee to have resolutions on these days as a portfolio committee, we can do so. We can take the decision here today. If we say we need these statements as a portfolio committee. But it's only out of, I think, politeness that the national minister will invite us to the launches. And we can also make that request if members feel like that. Otherwise, I think it's also up to members in the provinces in terms of the relationship that they have or the MECs there to get involved or get invited to these events. Yeah, that's what I want. So we can consider it at the end of the meeting.
I think my colleague Sulu will deal with the farming areas, but I think I will need to deal with the issue of International Day Against Drug Abuse and Illicit Trafficking. It's usually every year, 26 June. So I'm not sure what the Honourable Member is referring to in terms of last week, but it's around June, and even the National Drug Week is around June, just a week before the 26th of June. So, and we had national campaigns and also provincial activities, but I think in future would love also to invite members to join us when we do the celebration. Even today we were like, what is it that we're bringing in terms of materials, because there were caps that they didn't, they were saying, it's because I was from Durban, I should have had caps so that at least you have an idea you can market, because if you wear that cap, people will be like, what is this? We will invite the Honourable Members. Okay. The issue of non-profit organizations. Yes, as far as I know, the applications are still done in Pretoria because it is still a national act, but I know that the unit that is doing the NPO registration, they are also working towards decentralization, because it's the truth that the organizations that are registered are not even known by the provinces. So, and unfortunately, this act registers everyone, even in the field of DTI, in the field of health. But we were saying we are interested in those that are welfare-related or social development-related NPOs. But I think they have a challenge in terms of meeting the turnaround time. The last time it was 3 months, but I think due to high staff turnover, they can't meet the deadline of 3 months of registration. It's true that organizations wait long. But I know that the unit is really working on improving the service and making sure that they work closely with provinces to decentralize, mm-hmm. so that instead of a person driving to Pretoria, at least they can go to a provincial office, then there should be a link, a person linking with mm-hmm. Pretoria rather than organizations, mm-hmm. so the organizations traveling to Pretoria. The issue of farming area, I will refer it to my colleague Sulu, but I know that it's one area that we are still weak on.
Okay, I think that's the question
of the teaching empowerment program is silent on the issue of farming areas. If you, we brought this policy guidelines for VEP. If you look at the policy guidelines, there is a section on farm workers and dwellers. We are definitely going to focus on our farm mm-hmm. areas, our farm workers and the dwellers in the area, because we discover that rural areas are areas that have been neglected in the program. So our outreach program are now going to focus on rural areas in the future.
There is a
This is normal. I've covered all the issues on the presentation. Thank you very much, Mrs. Normala and your team. It's been very informative. I'm sure it will also help us in terms of the committee's work and our responsibilities in terms of our oversight. Thank you very much. Honourable members, would you like to have a 3-minute body break? Okay.
Yes.
And 3 minutes. She's out of order because I only get 3 minutes. Honourable members, we will be continuing with our meeting and we'll go to the second presentation to the Portfolio Committee on the role of the Department of Social Development at Ukutwala. And the presentation will be done by Mrs. M. Ngobo Mbera. She's the Director for Child Protection from the Department of Social Development. And we also have a representative from the Department of Social Development in the Eastern Cape Sound Rift. Thank you. Could you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and colleagues from the Department. My name is Nombogo Mgelane. I'm based at the Eastern Cape Province and I'm the Senior Manager for Children.
Could I ask you if you could stand in for Mrs. Ngobo Mbere while she's up? Would you be able to do that? So the presentation is there.
Originated from the Kosa culture where family is with marriage arrangement for the girls, so the girls from home. And the polio
kept us from testing Father Francis from other social services and vendors. And early and post-marriage revealed that the girls between the ages of 12 and 15 years are the most affected children. And these girls are abducted and forced to marry adult men. The practice directly and indirectly impacts negatively on the development of child, resulting in social isolation, denial of the right to education, poor life skills such as social harm, early pregnancy, and childbirth, and the risk of exposure to HIV disease. And we are saying it contributes to the patient's geographic area with the problem. According to our investigation, it's mainly in the OR Tambo municipality, specifically in Kamela administrative area, which is in the city, as well as in Flagstaff and Design. The current situation is that as a department, we made our own investigation in partnership with other partner departments. For an example, the SAPS civil society organization and community leaders. And we found that the practice is right at Kamela administrative area in that area. And what happened is that there were integrated awareness campaigns that were conducted, and these were led by the Department of Social Development together with SAPS. And the door-to-door campaign on the legislation to protect women and children were also held prior to the campaign. The campaign emphasized that failure to adhere to the law will result in law enforcement. And subsequently, to awareness events, there was an International Day for Families, which is normally held on the 15th of May. And this year the team was saying feminists and women challenges to the same well. Can I hand over? After the International Day for Families, there was a Candle Light Memorial. And this Candle Light Memorial was organized by our Directorate for HIV and AIDS. And the team was saying together, we are the solution.
I'm sorry about that. Continuing in the current situation, in the OR Tambo municipality, an unused facility has been identified at Palmerton. This facility is owned by the Methodist Church to accommodate young girls and women who ran away from forced marriage in need of shelter. Site visits and assessment of the Palmerton Center has been done. Report was presented to the municipality and top management of the province. The center has been assessed for registration as a place of care in line with the Children's Act. Intersectoral district committee meetings are taking place. Individual assessments of each child have been conducted so that they are placed appropriately. A dedicated social worker has been allocated to run the center, and community outreach programs are being implemented. Resolutions that have been taken thus far regarding this issue are that young Makoti, who have been abducted, that were taken against their will and wish to return home, should be allowed to do so, and the Lobola to be returned. It has been agreed that there should be no more Ukutwala in that area. Failure to comply will result to law enforcement. But also people need to be educated and made aware of what that law enforcement means and the consequences. The district municipality is to continue its assessment of children, and children to be separated from adults, with adults being placed at a Nomtata,
One Stop Center for Victims of Violence. Business plans are developed by the Center for Funding by the Department. Because right now everything was just done as a crisis management and intervention. Whilst they are fixing all the going through the procedural processes. Consideration of funding to be based on compliance with specific decisions to inform the service level agreement, the memorandum of understanding, and the availability of funds. Okay, and all of this is done within the framework, the legal framework, and starting with the international framework, because we have acceded to these international instruments. And when we develop our local laws, we have to make sure that they are aligned to the international instruments that we have signed. The United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, the Optional Protocol on the Sale of Children, Child Prostitution and Child Pornography, the UN Convention on Transnational Organizations, the Palermo Protocol, the United Nations Protocol to Prevent, Suppress and Punish Trafficking in Persons, especially women and children, the International Labour Organization Convention concerning the prohibition and immediate action for the worst forms of child labour, the Hague Convention on the Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction, the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child, and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. Our local legislative framework, we have the Constitution, and Section 28 of the Constitution, Section 1 and 2, which deals with the issues of rights of children. Section 7(2) of the Constitution requires states to protect, respect, promote, and fulfill the rights in the Bill of Rights. We have the Domestic Violence Act, which was talked about in the previous presentation. We have the criminal law. Sexual Offences and Related Matters, the Amended Sexual Offences Act, the Criminal Law Amendment Act of 105, South African Schools Act, the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, the Legal Aid Act, the Social Assistance Act to address issues of poverty, Disability Rights Charter of South Africa, Prevention of Organized Crime Act, the Films and Publications Act, as amended, Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. Then we have our own Children's Act, number 38 of 205 as amended. And in our Children's Act, which is not yet promulgated, but it's getting there because the regulations are almost finalized. Section 12 in the Children's Act states that a child has the right not to be subjected to social, cultural and religious practices which are detrimental to his or her well-being. Subsection 2 of Section 12 states that a child below minimum age set by law for a valid marriage may not be given out in marriage or engagement. And subsection 2b, a child above the minimum age may not be given out in marriage or engagement without his or her consent. And these laws have to be cross-referenced with common law so that we're not contradicting what the common law says. Section 18, 1, 2, and 3 focuses on parental rights and responsibilities, or parental responsibilities and rights in respect of a child, stating that a parent or a person who acts as a guardian of a child must give or refuse consent required by law in respect of a child, including consent to a child's marriage. Chapter 7 focuses on the protection of children, with a special focus on the National Child Protection, which there's a Part A that speaks to children who have been reported as being abused, neglected, or exploited, since ukuthwala falls under the ambit of exploitation. And then there's Part B for people who are unsuitable to work with children. which is a new provision, not in the current Child Care Act. Chapter 9 focuses on the child in need of care and protection. It's Section 150(1)(e) specifically speaks to a child who has been exploited or lives in circumstances that exposes the child to exploitation. Chapter 17 focuses on child abduction, giving effect to the Hague Convention on International Abduction. In terms of the Department of Social Development's roles and responsibilities, we have a policy framework and strategic plan for prevention and management of child abuse, and the strategy has got 6 pillars. What I need to say up front is that the strategy is going to be reviewed to be aligned to the New Children's Act, because we developed it before the development and the Children's Act was still in the making. The 6 pillars are intersectoral collaboration for an effective service delivery system, proper institutional arrangements, capacity building and training, advocacy, including, in fact, child participation, research, monitoring, and evaluation. So when the provinces develop their strategies, we encourage them to develop their strategies around these 6 pillars in terms of prevention and management of child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. The elements of the policy, principles underpinning the policy framework are the following. Rights of children are set out in the Constitution and the UN Convention and the African Charter to be upheld at all times. Child protection to be child-centered and recognize children as individuals and members of families and communities. All decisions and actions concerning the child to be in his or her best interest. And provision of opportunity for children to be heard in matters affecting them. That is a part that is we are still weak on in terms of child participation, but we are working on it. Programs to be responsive to the diversity of children's cultural backgrounds and circumstances in which they find themselves. We are not saying that programs should not be sensitive to cultural backgrounds, but also programs should move with the times. I mean, we don't live in a static environment. It's a dynamic environment. Things change. But still, children have to be grounded in terms of their cultural background. All role players to be accountable for their actions, protection, safety, and well-being for children to take precedence in all matters affecting them. All our role players in terms of other government departments, provincial departments, local governments, NGOs, and CBOs must be accountable for their actions in terms of protection and safety and well-being of children. Services to be children to be aligned with Matupili and Ubuntu principles. Our primary partners is the Department of Justice, including the NPA, the FOCA unit, education, health, labor, staff, correctional services, because we have children with incarcerated mothers, home affairs, Minister of Women, Children, Youth, and Persons with Disabilities, public works, local government and corporation, House of Leader of Traditional Leaders and Cooperative Governance, the new name. We have also since included Department of Transport and Housing, because when we were developing the Children's Act and we had public hearings, they featured very prominently in terms of services that they should be rendering to meet the rights of children and the lack of those services, and to be part of the major role players. Our other primary partners, Provincial Department of Social Development, as mentioned, area local government, faith-based organizations, national NGOs and CBOs, community leaders, which is chiefs, mayors, ward councillors, and many others. And our services are rendered on the 4 levels of intervention, which is the integrated social development model. prevention, early intervention, statutory intervention, and reintegration. And based on those four levels of intervention, DSG provides the following services: awareness raising program on care and protection of children. Annually, we have the Child Protection Week, which is launched at National, and it's on the last week of May. Provinces usually do it for the whole month, doing different things to make children aware, communities and families, of how to protect children, also to make children aware of their rights. This focuses on the care and protection of children from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. And we use all kinds of media to get messages out. And for next year, in fact, we'd like to have a whole year's kind of calendar of things to happen, not really in terms of big events, but messages going out in different ways through schools, in whatever way, radio programs, print media, on TV, on how children should be protected and for their well-being to be taken care of. And also preparing for the Soccer World Cup next year. The rights of the child, in terms of protection organizations, the rights of the child and the best interests of the child to be upheld at all times. They provide poverty alleviation programs, assistance, they provide assistance with accessing state grants. They also have the child participation in many different ways. Strengthen families and communities to provide the necessary care and protection to children. Engage with relevant stakeholders in the door-to-door campaigns. Develop the child exploitation strategy with specific focus on child labor, child trafficking, commercial sexual exploitation, children and Wutwala. We're in the process of finalizing this exploitation strategy. We are taking the lead, and we have the other national departments working with us. And I chair a child protection committee, National Child Protection Committee, which includes all our internal stakeholders within the department and also external. And that's the forum we use for developing all the strategies and policies. And they provide counseling and support services to children, victim empowerment services, provision of services with relevant stakeholders in terms of care and protection of children. For instance, birth and death registrations to ensure that they are issued and people have them for accessing different services, school admission, basic services, and life skills programs. Research, we have embarked on a 5-year surveillance study on child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. We're just at the initial stages. We got funding from CEDA. In fact, I was supposed to be there today at Treasury because they are here from Canada to hear how far we're progressing, because they've funded us 35 million rand for 5 years to find out, to do a study on child abuse, neglect, and exploitation, which will inform our policy and also our legislation, and also will give us a tool to lobby for more funds in terms of intervention. Our intervention will be informed about what is really happening on the ground instead of being anecdotal. And then monitoring and evaluation. In terms of prevention and early intervention, which is legislated now in the Children's Act, and the Children's Act says prevention programs are provided to families and children in order to strengthen and build their capacity and self-reliance to address problems that may or are bound to occur in the family environment, which, if not attended to, may lead to statutory intervention. Legislating prevention is, the intention was to turn things around, put more resources up front for a prevention before a child goes deeper into the system, so that we will spend less funds and time to correct the wrongs that have been done, and the child is already damaged, and it takes a long time to undo what has been done wrongly. And it takes more resources, in fact. Whereas if you invest upfront, then you save later on. It pays off. Then early intervention programs are provided to families where their children identified as being vulnerable or at risk of harm or removal into alternative care. And Section 144 of the Children's Act states that prevention and early intervention programs must focus on preserving a child's family structure. So a child must remain within the family to avoid child being removed and placed in alternative care. Developing appropriate parenting skills, including promotion of positive, non-violent forms of discipline. Providing psychological rehabilitation, therapeutic programs for children, which we are doing with the transformation of child and youth care centers. That is the therapeutic programs that are appropriate. Preventing the neglect, exploitation, abuse, or inadequate supervision of children. Preventing the recurrence of problems in the family environment that may harm children or adversely affect their development. Diverting children away from the child and youth care system and the criminal justice system. Avoiding the removal of a child from the family environment. And then it further says that prevention and early intervention programs may include assisting or empowering families to obtain the basic necessities of life. Providing families with information to enable them to access services, supporting and assisting families with a chronically ill or terminally ill family member, early child development programs to be made available to children, promoting the well-being of children and the realization of their full potential. And then prevention and early intervention programs must involve and promote the participation of families, parents, caregivers, and children in identifying and seeking solutions to their problems. They must be part of seeking solutions to their problems. In conclusion, there is a need for an environment that enables and supports change. Because if the environment is not enabling, it's very difficult to push for change. To strengthen advocacy and awareness raising programs. And also to go back and check on the impact of those programs. That is strengthening our M&E. Commitment by government to work collaboratively at all spheres of government. The civil society involvement and support of the media, sending out appropriate messages regarding the rights of children. And to have education on relationships, sexuality, and reproductive health coupled with services. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Ngobo Mbeke. And your colleague from the East Asia, Mrs. Ngobo, am I right?
No.
What, you are right?
No.
Ngobo? Okay. Honorable members, here you have the presentation. And I think we also got an insight into what the provincial report
has done.
I would like you to just roll your minds back to the meeting we had last week with UNICEF when they gave us an international perspective on child marriages. And maybe then just compare of what programs is out there in sub-Saharan Africa. And what we are doing in South Africa. And I think that will also assist you in terms of getting a picture. Questions? Honorable Member Makagula, I've noted all of you. Can we just move along?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. My question is. They do this in the name of culture. What it used to have with the house of tradition. Second question, I just want to know about the minimum age, because it's stipulated in the law, in the legislation framework, that below minimum age and above minimum age. What is the child minimum age? I tell you, just.
Thank you very much. Honorable member, just please excuse me. I just have to stand up and speak too much. So this is normal.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I just want to compare the two presentations, because last time we got that one of the UNICEF. When I hear that presentation, it really confirms that we are the highest according to the child abuse or the violation of the children's right, when I compared the two. But I just wanted to check what is our relation in terms of reintegration, because I think there are cases where you have done the reintegration of the child to the family. I just wanted to know what are the challenges you are confronted with during those times, because as the honorable member have already alluded, some they will hide behind the culture. I want to know, I have heard, and then I've read here, you've got your stakeholders is AMACROS, the chiefs and the civil organization. I want to know, because some of the people, they will say they are protected according to the constitution. What are you confronted with when you are at the debate, having those sectoral meeting with the chiefs? What is the move? Because I just want to know, because others the culture's belief is that we must do this ukutwala versus the children's act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I would like to thank the department for the presentation. According to the presentation, it seems to me that this issue is managed and contained, because you do speak to your roles and responsibilities, and you speak to the services, you know, the interventions, the four interventions. You know, I'd like to know whether I'm right. And do you still have, you know, if I'm not right, do you still have reported cases after May 2009? Because you speak to the campaign that you had, Together We Are the Solution, the campaign. And if there are still reported cases, you speak about law enforcement. Was any person charged, you know, the adult, because it is a criminal act? And then I'd like to know on slide 7, the current situation. Children to be separated from adults, with adults being placed at Intata, one stop center for victims of violence. I would like to know, which adults are you speaking about? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm from England. Thank you. And also, thank you for the presentation. Can you start thinking about all the things that are being done to us as women, and all these things are being done forcefully to us, although we've got all these sort of rights. The tricky one is that I'm sitting and thinking about
the lobola, the returning of the makoti, and the child that is born in the forcibly marriage. How involved is government or the department going to be? Because the makoti has to be returned. There is a lobola that has to be returned also, and there is a child that is born. What is happening there?
Thank you. It's rather interesting. It gets more and more interesting every day with these presentations that we have. And it actually sets a person's mind thinking. My issue is, how does the lack of social workers impact on service delivery? Because whatever is implemented needs to be monitored. How does the lack of social workers and even auxiliary social workers impact on getting your programs implemented and especially in the rural areas? Because we tend to forget about the rural areas where these issues arise and where they exist on a daily basis. So how does the lack of social workers implement? And then I would also like you to speak a little bit more on your challenges facing the department.
Around the issues. Thank you, Shepard. Part of my questions are being covered by my honorable members. The only thing that I wanted to know, according to the presentation, it is clearly stated that the practice was found to be right at the Kamanela administrative area. In terms of the statistics, presently how many kids are involved in the whole trial of the practice? And how many people have been charged in my former colleagues?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to check with the department if there's any intention to come up with a legislation concerning Ukutwala. And also, it was mentioned that the prevention must be made, in fact, intervention to ECD, early child development. So we've got the ECD, which was run by the Department of Education, it's now with the Social Development. I just want to check if the ECDs are funded by the department, because they're now run by the civil society or the NGOs. I'm saying this because in Tshwane municipality, they do fund them with something like 100,000 per ECD, but not all of them. I just want to check if we are also linked with the local authorities, municipalities, and also funding them from the Department of Social Development. Because previously, the Department of Education was in charge of paying the educators and other resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, these areas is Bazana. It borders on KwaZulu-Natal. And we're speaking only to the Eastern Cape in this presentation. Because it's a wild coast. What about KwaZulu-Natal? Because this also has its appearance in KwaZulu-Natal. So I'd like the department to speak to that too. Thank you.
I've got maybe just to add to what Honorable Milo Malchar said. Have you picked up any cases? And I would like to ask my colleague from the national department, so it's unfair to ask a colleague from the Eastern Cape. is there any phenomenon that you've picked up of Ukutuala in other provinces in the country? I think that's quite an important question. Then in terms of when I looked at the consequences of early child marriages, I didn't see the issue of maternal mortality as a consequence of that in your presentation, and whether you've looked at that. Then in terms of your the process, and I would like to describe the Eastern Cape itself with the program that you've embarked on with your stakeholders. The unification of the parents and the young Makoti, which is in the real sense for a child, have there been instances where the child has been rejected by the parents? In that case, the parents have surrendered their parental rights. And have those children become the wards of the state, or are they just floating in the system? And do you have a whole program of really looking into the welfare of the child? Because if that is the case, you're going to sit with a child that will be turning 18 shortly, but still have no family. They have family out there, but they are not wanted. And I think they're the state have to go the extra mile in terms of protecting that young child. In terms of the Department of Education and Social Development, these young girls have been taken out of school. Have they been put back into school, or at least into a life skills program, so they can make up for the education and the time that they've lost? And how are you dealing with the perpetrator, that's the adult male? Because having sex, you don't have sex with the child, you rape the child.
Mm-hmm.
And have there been any interaction with these perpetrators of child rape? Since I'm sure that the perpetrator has no rights over the child that has been born of the rape. But in terms of reforming the perpetrator, because it could be that the perpetrator could be looking for just another child bride. So how do you make sure that everyone is actually on board in this whole process? Now, UNICEF, in terms of the presentation that they've given us last week, they said that the approach was, especially with your female mutilation and your child brides in sub-Saharan Africa, they had a non-judgmental approach to the program, and that really put a lot of success, where you had villagers agreeing not to go ahead with a few female cutting or mutilation. And is that also the approach where communities have decided Ukutuala will not be taking place in this village? And then also basically empowering villages to deal with the consequences of what has happened in the past, but then having taking a very clear decision with the leader that this will not be taking place. I think that is very important for us to know. So that if these perpetrators and families have a change of heart, I think that's very important. And then just another issue, and I think it's related to the rights of the child. You have Makwetas, young boys that are still in the bush, raping young children, women, while they are still in the bush. And I want to know from the Eastern Cape, how are you managing that? There have been reports of those incidences. But also coming to your broader issue of social welfare services, but also a very important factor when it comes to social cohesion, the role of men and boys in society, their role in the society, in the families, but also in their relationships with young girls and women. Now, I think there's been an ad on TV where they talk about this very positively in terms of, but clearly this phenomenon of rape in our society and the role that men expect young girls and women to play is a serious cause of concern. And social cohesion can, building social cohesion can play a very important role in terms of creating equity in our society. The last question is poverty. When I looked at the SABC program, there was not one rich family. It was all extremely poor families being very desperate. And you get the impression from the program that Ukutwala is also used as a tool to get income. And you see, if you return that young girl to that family, they're precisely where they started off. The added burden of returning the lobola is an added burden on an extremely poor family that is still very vulnerable. So how is government assisting that family?
Committee, and we honored with the presidency Mr. Sandy Mbacha, who is a special advisor to Minister Miyande Sibende. And this minister has gone to the Eastern Cape and met with the traditional chiefs and kings of the area. So from a coordinating point of view, government has taken note of what has happened, and there have been actions and reach out to the appropriate level with the leadership and the communities to where that is happening. So, Sandy, if you just could just wave your hand that people can see who you are. But, yes, and, just to flag it as a further issue that the committee can come back and maybe get a report from that committee on that. Sandy?
Mbacha.
Mr. Mbacha, would you be able to also respond to some of the issues that we've raised in terms of giving us clarity? Thank you very much. So, are you ready just to start?
I will respond to the more generic questions, and Ms. Mkilana Nomgobo will respond to the program, to the provincial specific.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I'll let her go first.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, as well as the Honorable Members. I will answer the question as stated. There was a question on this practice being done in the name of culture,
mm-hmm.
and asking what has been done. I just want to report that in the province, we are fortunate in the sense that amongst the stakeholders, we have a traditional leadership on board. They are the ones that lead, particularly in trying to conscientize communities around the cultural issues, because what they explain about the practices that it was done, but not only to young girls.
So we have that advantage, honorable member. And also there was a question about whether we still have cases that are reported after we have not received reports of any new cases. And what is happening, honorable chair, is that you know, there are children that have been placed at the Palmerton Center, and at the center in Lusikisik, which was an intervention by the district municipality to rescue some of these young girls that were affected by this practice. But I just want to mention that not all the children that are placed there at the Palmerton Center have been abducted. As we speak, the latest report in terms of the numbers of the children that are placed there at the center, they are 91 at present. And out of this number, it's only 11 that have been abducted. Some of the children are orphans. Some have been placed there because of poverty, as Honorable Chair have stated. And as a result, as a department, when we heard about what is happening, we are part of the, you know, the stakeholders in trying to assist, because the center has been already established. We have a dedicated social worker that visits the center 3 times a week to assess, because some of the children were not supposed to be there. They have not been, you know, abducted. Some it's things that government, departments, and then civil society could have assisted to intervene to assist the family. So the process of assessment is being followed. And also, there was a question around children attending school. When we visited there, you know, the center is nearby to the schools, local schools. So all the children that are placed there, they are attending school. And that also affects the process of integrating children with the families, because already they have started attending school. And the Department of Education there is very cooperative in terms of making sure that children, when they are placed there, no child stays at the center without attending school. Okay, I've covered the statistics. It's 11 for abduction. And also the ramifications. The number of people that have been arrested, because SAPS came on board on the awareness campaign, and as well as the minister also went there to emphasize that people will be arrested when they continue to do the, you know, the practice. From the cases that were reported, the 11 of the children, 2 perpetrators were arrested, and they have been released on bail, and their cases they are in court. And then there are 9 pending cases due to the fact that you know, the police are still collecting, you know, information that can lead to, you know, taking the cases to court. Empowerment of communities on the practice. I just want to report that last month, it was in August, last month we had a human rights commission in our province. They held a seminar. A seminar was held,
And after that, for the whole week, there were community awareness campaigns that were intersectoral in nature to, you know, educate communities around the practice and how it affects the children as well as the whole picture of the community. Because as we speak, you know, the community is known as, you know, ill-treating its children. Abakweta, raising girls while they are still in the bush. I don't want to lie a chair, you know. As I speak as a department, we have checked this with Masimanyane. We have an organization in our province that is doing very, very well in terms of attending to the gender-based violence. And they have got a special program that deals with awareness campaigns to focusing on men around this question. No reports have been reported at present. Poverty. Yeah, it is true, Honorable Chair, you know, families that are affected, they, you know, are very, very poor. And I just want to report that, you know, I mean, as you all know that our province is one of the provinces that is high on poverty. And, you know, within the province, this district, OR Tambo, is leading in terms of poverty. Mm-hmm. And as a province, we have an integrated poverty eradication program. And it is coordinated in our department. It was an ex-co resolution. It's supposed to be coordinated at the Office of the Premier, but then it's coordinated within our department to make sure that all government departments are dealing, you know, with poverty in an integrated fashion. Also, within the department, we have sustainable livelihoods. We've got also a program that deals with families to make sure that we do not only attend to protecting the rights of children, but we try to make sure that the families are able to take care of their children. And we've got family resource centers, for an example, that are in our province to make sure that all the family members participate in this program. We've got also income-generating projects that make sure that women particularly participate, because we have seen that where there's a child, there is a where there are women, there's always children, you know. That is why when we look at the orphans, we try as a department to, you know, categorize orphans. We say maternal orphans, because we know that most of the time women are the caregivers, and though we also check whether the children are double orphans, you know, that kind of thing. I think I've covered the issue of reunification. We haven't had reports of reunification presently of the children, because they are still at the center, and the social workers is still, you know, dealing with the interventions, because as I've mentioned, it's the 11 that have been abducted. Some are there because of other reasons, you know, which are dealt with by this social worker.
Just on the 11, would you say that there could be that there is some children that fell through the system that are still out there, married to male adults, but that didn't come forward? And if so, because there was in the one incident at FNC, there was this young girl that was pregnant. She was 15, and she said she was also abducted. But she's pregnant. What can she do? She will have to stay with her husband. So, in terms of those girls that are still trapped in those marriages, is there any outreach to them in terms of your checks that you are doing, the door-to-door visits? Because I think the purpose of the whole exercise is not just to take care of those 11 children, but to eradicate the practice altogether and to make sure that children belong to their, go back to their parents where they belong to, and not married before the time.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was also a question about babies that are born as a result of the practice and what the state is doing about it. There is one of the girls, you know, has a two-year-old child, and she was admitted at the center. At present, the baby has been placed at another center in Amthatha, at Bethany, because the mother is attending school. So I just want to report that as government and also as the department, we are doing something about it. And during the awareness campaigns, Honorable Chair, you know, when the community was educated on the practice, there were reports about women who were married for 30 years who reported now to the team that they were abducted. You know, now they want to leave, you know. And as the team, sorry about that, you know, it was agreed during the sessions that the cases will be dealt with individually, because one needs to be careful here, because some women would want to end marriages but have an excuse now. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, on assessment, women will be, you know, assisted to make sure that they, you know, come out of abuse.
But in terms of the law, is now, is there, you can report abuse that took place 30 years ago, 20 years ago, or what's the limit on the report of a crime that has taken place? In terms of, it's also a rights issue that we really can lay this charge in. If the factors have been there, it could have been there 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
More than 30 years ago, even. Yeah.
Yes, it is true, Honorable Chair, that you know, through this process of intervention, it has been found that, you know, women have been you know, exposed to a lot of gender-based violence, and it was time that they come forward and they get assistance. And I remember Honorable Chair also asked the minimum age, you know. According to legislation, the 18 is the actual age. You know, you are a child up to 18 years. Yeah. And the reason why some of the children were taken to Umthatha Center is because, you know, from the list of these children that are there, some are over 18, some are 21 or 23. So, and they have been you know, exposed to this kind of violence. Then we said we have centers within the OR Tambo district. So let us refer in those that are over 18, because we needed to be careful in trying to assist the center to define itself
terms of, is it a crisis center or is it a child in youth care center, you know, so that it is easy for us as a department, when we look at budget issues, we refer it to the relevant directorates that will have a funding. So it was a question of aligning the children in terms of their age and the service that is actually there within the province. I'm heading over now to Ms. Kumbese.
Okay, thank you. There was a question regarding, I don't know, the debate in the chief? Mm-hmm. Or is the colleague from the ministry going to okay. He says he's going to attend to that one. And then the challenges with reintegration of children. There are always challenges with reintegration in terms of changing the circumstances at home so that the family is able to accommodate the child and also the interest of the child. And as been previously alluded to, that some of this utwala is a poverty alleviation kind of thing. And we have to do awareness raising and a lot of work in terms of saying this cannot be allowed in terms of children's rights. And also, honorable members, I hope you are quite aware that I've listened to the radio sometimes when I'm driving in KZN, that, or in the Eastern Cape, that a lot of people still don't understand what children's rights is about. Mm-hmm. They think that children's rights is us just letting children run wild and do what they like and not listen to parents. And we are saying children's rights come with responsibility, that you have to emphasize both, that there's a balance. A right comes with a responsibility. So we still have to do a lot of work in terms of reinforcing that. So that's why reintegration becomes a problem. Because with ukutwala, for instance, I would imagine the parents usually are involved. It's sort of some arranged thing, because it's not reported. Recently, we had a National Child Protection Committee meeting and had reports from provinces. I've never heard of any report of these cases. Also on the Child Protection Register, because we look at the type of cases that are reported. We have not heard anything about ukutwala. And when we were developing the Children's Act, some members here would remember when we had public hearing, the Eastern Cape was very strong on the issue of virginity testing. Mm-hmm. We sort of linked to this forced marriage thing, but it was not dwelled upon that much. I think we are weak in that area. We should have legislated it like we legislated the issue of virginity testing and the circumcision. Mm-hmm. So with the amendments, we would need to attend to that. But also, I hope the research that study that we're going to do is going to unearth all these problems in terms of what is happening down there in the community, and give us information in terms of statistics, qualitative and quantitative kind of information. And then regarding the impact of social workers in getting programs implemented in rural areas, we are facing challenges with that. Although I know that in the retention strategy, recruitment and retention strategy, there's supposed to be accommodation for people who are in the rural areas so that there's an incentive for them to stay there. But as Ms. Nkumalo did say, that the infrastructure is also accommodating that, but there were also issues of accommodation discussed. For instance, if I come from Johannesburg to go and live in a rural area where I don't know anybody, there's issue of accommodation, transport, and all of that. And social workers don't have cars. Sometimes they don't even have a driver's license. So those are the other issues. There's the challenge of underreporting of cases of abuse, neglect, and exploitation. If we don't have enough eyes and ears out there, and also the lack of infrastructure in terms of offices, cars, and tools of the trade to enable the social workers to work. We do have auxiliary social workers who are being trained, and I've heard that if they do well, they can get a bursary to become a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
We also have child and youth care workers who work in communities, who also we rope in terms of assisting with finding out and referring for appropriate services in terms of children. But there is an impact on the ground. Until we have enough social workers, we are going to face challenges of children falling in between the cracks, even if a child is reported, but there's no follow-up in terms of rendering services. I've addressed the issue of legislation that we will note that because we're already taking amendments, you know, law is developing every day. You can never stop, but you have to start somewhere. The funding of ECD facilities, ECD facilities are subsidized by government if the ECD facility is registered. They are subsidized per child per day, especially now with the ECD being an apex program for government.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of funds have been injected into expansion of ECD services as a prevention measure. So they are subsidized, and the subsidies, in fact, have gone up. They are much higher than what they used to be. I think now it's, in most provinces, it's 12 rand per child per month, to increase to 15 next year.
Mm-hmm.
And the Department of Education is still paying for teachers in grade zero. Grade R. They pay for teachers who are teaching in grade R, and they develop the curriculum. Ukuthwala happens in KZN. I would agree with that. I'm from KZN, but I haven't lived there in many years. But because there's cross-border issues between KZN and Eastern Cape, I would imagine to spill over to KZN.
Mm.
But it has not received the prominence like it has in the Eastern Cape, because that part of the Eastern Cape, in fact, overlaps with the southern part of Natal, KZN. Mm. But we would have to find out some more from the province, because I haven't heard anything from the province. I'll take note of that. We have not had any cases of Ubutwala in other provinces at all. But we will continue to probe and to find out whether it is happening. In terms of maternal mortality, I have not heard anything. We'd have to find out more from health. Unfortunately, they have not been attending my Child Protection Committee meeting for us to exchange as stakeholders. But we can also pursue that one. But through the ministry. I think the ministry is going to help us in terms of integrating and collaboration. Minister of Women, Children and People with Disabilities as their oversight. I would agree with the chairperson regarding the building of social cohesion, which does play a pivotal role in alleviating poverty. I think I've covered most of the general question, unless there's something I left out.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think I also wanted to highlight that the issue of Ukuthwala is not only cultural only. There's a lot of religious grouping that practice this similar thing where older men will just pinpoint young girls in a church for marriage and things are organized. And then also on the issue of related to or linked to poverty. When we hear the stories from the mayor in terms of what is the Lobola price paid for these children, it goes to as low as 3 goats, which means lots of that it's a huge lots of poverty-related issue because lots of and then I think the other thing that exacerbates lots of the issue is that a lot of these kids are staying with grandparents and like relatives. They are not staying with their biological parents because their biological parents might have passed away, or they are lots of they left when they were young. So it becomes an issue that sort of it doesn't really like, sort of affect you as a mother of this child because you don't have any direct link, as you put it. So I think it becomes a problem because in all of these, Ukfala, there is someone who's supposed to be playing a guardianship role. Mm-hmm. It's either the grandparents or the parents of the children like, sort of, for allowing them to go, because the reason some of them are staying in Palmerton is because when they tried to run and return home, they were told, like, so they were reorganized to be re-twilight, by other like, so men to come in and abduct them again. So there is that like, so far, bigger issue in the villages. And so I think when the Minister of Police visited the area with the Minister of Women and Minister Stoloshi Treka, he instructed the police in the area to say, you don't only arrest the man who sleeps with the child, you also arrest the parents as well because they are involved in this practice, because if they are allowing the children to be taken back again, they also like mean that somehow they are also involved in the illegal practice. And when we met with the king of the Mpondos, and the traditional leaders in the area, we were fortunate that like, so the House of Traditional Leaders from the province accompanied us as well, and they were the one who instructed them, saying the tradition is not, it's broken the way that it's done, because the origin of the tradition like, so for the culture is that it's done to people of age. You don't do it to children like, so who are younger than 18. So the emphasis was like, so the thing that was nice about it was traditional leaders telling the area traditional leaders that if you now like, sort of allow this practice to take place, you are actually as custodians of our tradition and culture, you are actually like, sort of now allowing it to be taken to a different corner, which is a dirty corner. So you need to stand up and guard against it and really make sure that from now on going forward, it's practiced properly. It's we don't allow criminality to enter the process where like you're now going to marry young girls as age of 15. Because they went further to say that like a girl of 15 years old and 14, the body is not yet ready to carry a child. Mm-hmm. So it was nice that like, so that you had traditional leaders, like of senior traditional leaders telling the local traditional leaders that like, so the thing that you allowing to happen in your area is actually not like sort of the culture that we used to do it as the origin of the culture. So let's like sort of correct the practice and get it done properly. But I think like sort of the as much as HIV/AIDS has its myths, I think like sort of there are a lot of myths around the issues of Ukfala, in the sense that the belief is that if you take them while they are 15, they haven't really had any sex, so they are good at that age. So because the 18-year-olds have already like sort of had sexual relationships, so they are not as good as the 15-year-olds. So it's that needs to be corrected as well. That the reality of it is that you can't like sort of just abduct, because it's an offense to have sexual relations with a child of underage. So the minister is going to be returning to the province and to Lusikisiki in the next month to now like, sort of do another imbizos collectively with the Department of Social Development and other stakeholders in the province to drive it again and really like, sort of try to make emphasis on the message that it is wrong like, sort of the way it is done. It's not against culture, but the culture is not done correctly. Thank you.
members, I've all your questions. I'm not going to entertain new questions at this stage, but have all your concerns be addressed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At this stage, we're running into lunchtime, and we only have an hour before the sitting starts. So I'm going to say thank you very much to the Department of Social Development, both national and provincially from the Eastern Cape, as well as from the Presidency. Thank you very much for the inputs and the presentation that you've made and your responses. I think there's going to be a follow-up. The committee will deliberate on what you've said to us today. As you can see, we are very serious about this matter. We do not take kindly to the violation of children's rights within our communities. And we will also then be in contact with you around these issues. Thank you very much. Honourable members, in terms of our agenda, I will allow the officials to leave. We just need to discuss whether we just the issue around our trip to the Eastern Cape, and or whether we want to have a follow up on this matter. We know that the Minister Sibiya is going to visit the Eastern Cape, and then would we like to be part of that process with the MEC of Social Development in the province, and we can then see for ourselves whether these issues that they have been addressed. Would you rather would like to see that, even if we just send a delegation of the Portfolio Committee to the city and not just our committee. I think that's the kind of discussion that we should have. And then just to tell you that the STAL is proposing that we meet with them on the 22nd. The evening of the 22nd. Mm-hmm. Because on the 23rd is going to be a plenary. Yeah. Oh. So, and they would meet with us the evening of the 22nd in Long Street. It's a very vibrant street in Cape Town, but
we don't know.
Yeah, you just have to indicate to the committee secretary that you're going to do transport to your accommodation. After the session was just done, which I'm sure you could have. So please diarize it, the 22nd, the evening. Yeah, immediately after the session. Yes, the evening of the 22nd, please diarize. We'll be meeting the STAL in Long Street. Okay. Is there a name on the place?
Yes.
You know? Sorry. In Yoni Kroll. Okay. You can just liaise with the committee secretary after the committee meeting about where is in Yoni Kroll actually. Okay. And then next week on the same date, UNFPA will be visiting us, and we'll also be getting a briefing by the Department of Social Development on the War Room on Poverty, by the War Room on Poverty Unit, and we will then also be adopting all committee reports and minutes at that meeting. So I would really urge members all to be there. Now, honourable members, Ms. Vice, the honourable members felt when you were on the oversight that we want to approve minutes after every meeting. So the previous minutes will then be adopted in the next meeting. So this will be the last time that we will be adopting minutes in mass. Okay. Also, I want to take this opportunity formally for apologizing for the horrible transport that members suffered during the oversight visit to the Western Cape. Papa, I will be taking up the matter with the Secretary of Parliament. And I want to, I'm going to ask him to give me the understanding in writing that this will happen again. Right, honourable members, quickly in the next 3 minutes, what is your take on the Ukutuala discussion and the oversight issue? He said that in the next month, the Minister Sabia will be visiting the area. I was suggesting that we can behave with the Minister, the MEC of Social Development. And then maybe even speak to our national minister, that we go down and we do an assessment of what we've seen here. We can either go as a committee, or we can go as a delegation. We can nominate 2 or 3 people from the committee to go and on the oversight. Or do you still see the need for us to go there? The Lusiki City.
So that's the board is in the court. Honorable Member of the Parliament, Honorable Member of the
Court. Chairperson, what are the financial implications if we go as a group or as a delegation? I don't know how much we're hitting a budget, but really we'd like to go there.
Yeah, we'll have enough funds for the visit. I think we can combine it. Not just for the one matter, but we can, because there's also other safety. The secure place of safety, blah blah blah, and so on. So would you like us to work out a comprehensive visit of facilities?
Yes.
We can do that. Okay. No, we have a budget for oversight for traveling to the province. So I'm sure we can work out a visit to the Eastern Cape with the information that we have. Thank you very much, honourable members. So that settles it then. We'll make it a bit broader, more comprehensive. And we liaise with the MEC, the Eastern Cape, and with SASA, and with any other institutional that's in the Eastern Cape that resides under National Department of Social Development. Are we looking at October? It's National Social Development Month in October. Let me go there then, when we get back. I think we come back in early October. First week of October.
Chairperson, while we're preparing for that comprehensive trip that we're going to do,
What about, we don't forget the NDA and the project that they claim that they are supporting, just like they funded them. So those are the things that we need to
do. All entities?
Yes, all entities.
And after someone signed on the sidewalk, us meeting the committee there too.
Yeah, but obviously they will be hosting us sometime on the other. Oh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I request that we don't go on the stage where the embassy is going. Maybe we go before so that we can see the other people and then join the embassy when it's going.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Magagula, can I just see you for a minute?